Welcome to World Ocean Radio.
Mayor Jeremy Harris served more than 10 years as the mayor of the city and county of Honolulu, Hawaii, the 12th largest city in the United States. He retired from politics in January of 2005. Prior to becoming mayor, Harris was Honolulu's longest-serving managing director, a position he held for 9 years. Under Mayor Harris's leadership, Honolulu achieved worldwide recognition, including First Place Gold Award for Large Cities International Award for Livable Cities 2004, Best City Government Website in the United States 2003, Special Achievement Award in Geographic Information System Technology 2003, and Number One City in the U.S. Use of Technology in Delivering Government Services 2002, as well as America's Best Transit System in the American Public Transportation Association 2000 and 1994. During his 3 terms as mayor, Honolulu was recognized as one of the best managed cities in the United States. In addition to the hundreds of awards the city received during his tenure, Mayor Harris also earned national and international acclaim. Mayor Harris is currently a senior visiting faculty member in Energy and Environment at the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm, Sweden, and an advisor on sustainability to the National Academy of Science in Washington, D.C. Mayor Harris holds a Master's of Science degree in Population and Environmental Biology, specializing in urban ecosystems, from the University of California, Irvine, and is the author of a new book, The Renaissance of Honolulu, The Sustainable Rebirth of an American City. Mayor Jeremy is talking today about the impact cities have on our oceans.
Thank you very much for that kind introduction. I'm going to talk today about how we have to deal with cities, how we have to build sustainable cities if, in fact, we are going to save our oceans. I don't think it matters what metrics we use. I think it's clear that our oceans are in jeopardy, whether it's looking at coastal water pollution and the thousands of cubic meters of waste that we dump into those nearshore marine habitats, whether it's the sediment that runs off our urban areas and our agricultural areas, adding more nutrients and sediment load to our nearshore waters, or whether it's the destruction of mangroves that we've seen in the last century, with almost half of the wetlands around the world destroyed by urbanization. Overfishing, we have overfished most of our stocks, and many of our commercial stocks are contaminated now with the effluent from industrial development, such as heavy metals. And of course, perhaps the most obvious impact that we've had on our oceans is the impact we've had on our coral reefs, where 90% of the reefs around the world exhibit significant damage. Our ecosystems, our reef ecosystems, are in serious decline. All of these issues are, in fact, urban issues, and I believe that the fate of the oceans rests with our cities. We are now in the urban era. Half of the people in the world, for the first time in history, now live in cities, and we're adding to those cities at an alarming rate. 60 million people a year become urban, new urban dwellers on this planet. The trouble is that we have built our cities and managed our cities in an unsustainable way, and that unsustainable urban development is the primary factor that is deteriorating our oceans. Now, a great deal of very good effort from the marine community has gone into saving the oceans. Research efforts, marine protected areas, all of those are well needed and instrumental in the fight to protect our oceans. But if our cities are not dealt with, if we disregard the major contributor to the demise of our oceans, we will not be able to save our ocean ecosystems. So the question is, how do cities affect our oceans? Well, first of all, the failed energy policy of our countries and our cities is the major cause of the problems with our coral reefs, as we all know. Global warming is basically a failed urban energy policy. Urban runoff Most of the contamination for nearshore reefs and estuaries and embayments is coming from urban areas. Nutrients, hydrocarbons washed off our roads into our catch basins, emptied directly into our nearshore waters. And of course, the sediment runoff that comes not just from our cities, but from the agricultural hinterlands that surround our cities. Then, of course, we have point source water pollution problems also with an urban origin. Municipal wastes, wastewater, sewage effluent, adding further nutrient load and sediment load, industrial waste, the heavy metals and other chemicals that we talked about earlier, all having an impact. Our urban areas are also directly impacting our marine habitats through construction activity, sand mining, dredging activity, nearshore construction of groynes and harbors, filling of wetlands, all are impacts that are coming from the urban development around the world. Even the urban poverty that is resulting from this tremendous influx of people into our cities is having an impact on our marine resources. We know that when people move to cities, they increase their protein intake. They eat more meat and fish, and so we're putting more pressure on our fishery resources. We also know that most coastal cities rely heavily on fisheries, local fisheries, for subsistence fisheries. And so as we have population growth in those urban areas, we have more and more pressure put on the subsistence fisheries, and of course we have more and more problems with those marine ecosystems. All of these issues that I've talked about are urban issues. If we're going to save our oceans, we have to first save our cities. We have to realize, first of all, that we've developed our cities in an unsustainable way. We need to realize that cities are really urban ecosystems. We have to start viewing our cities as we would view natural ecosystems. We have to start modeling our cities after natural ecosystems. They are, in fact, systems that up till now have been managed and developed in a stovepipe approach. Most city governments don't recognize the interrelationships between land use policy and transportation and energy policy and economic development, urban infrastructure, but in fact those are interrelating systems, much like an ecosystem is. That's how we have to start approaching our urban development. There has been much talk about the global warming problem and the dramatic increase of carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas. And of course, there has been, as far as the United States is concerned, I believe, complete inaction and irresponsible behavior on the part of our national government. But the reality is, it's not up to national governments to solve this problem. It is up to local governments. Greenhouse gases are being generated by cities. The combustion of fossil fuels is being generated by cities. And so it's up to cities to solve the problem, to meet the Kyoto protocols and above. Well, when you look at the energy policy that most urban areas have followed, you realize that it is completely unsustainable. And so the first thing that local government can do is take a systems approach to energy. That means looking at land use policy, at transportation, at the built environment, the building codes, as well as energy, primary energy generation, in a different way from a systems approach. And so when we look at coastal communities, they are in fact the cities that are going to bear the brunt of the global warming disaster. Honolulu, for instance, is relying entirely on tourism for its economy. This is Waikiki. This is Waikiki as it is today. Our scientists and others have projected what the coastline of Waikiki will look like by the year 2100. And this is their projection based on some fairly conservative estimates of sea level rise as a result of global warming. Clearly, cities have a vested interest in making sure that energy policy is changed so that we reduce the release of greenhouse gases and forestall some of the negative impacts that are going to happen to us as a result of global warming. The first thing cities can do is change their land use planning. Most cities have been built around the automobile instead of around people. We need to rebuild cities around the pedestrian instead of the car. We need to start instituting smart growth policies. In other words, land use policies that promote higher density mixed-use living that reduce the dependence on automobile transportation, and in so doing, reduce our consumption of fossil fuels. We need to change the way cities do their zoning and permitting so that, for instance, in a residential area is usually separated by many miles from an employment center. If you take an employment center such as this, a light industrial area in Honolulu, the question then is, how can we convert an employment center that hires people from many miles away and results in lots of automobile transportation, how can we convert a community such as this into a smart growth community that minimizes reliance on automobiles? Well, the first thing we can do is have requirements for urban design guidelines so that we have the development of a livable community around a light industrial economic base, that we provide apartments for people to live and offices for them to work that are in within walking distance, that we provide shops and grocery stores so that they can shop without having to get in an automobile, and that we provide the amenities that are required to build truly a high-quality, livable, sustainable community. Smart growth principles such as this basically are founded on the fundamental assumption that we need to convert our cities to be pedestrian-friendly, designed around the pedestrian, and not around the automobile, which means we have to change our transportation policies for urban development. We have to start focusing on reducing transportation demand through such things as changing land use policy to encourage smart growth and higher density mixed-use development, but also even providing city services over the web instead of requiring people to drive to City Hall. There are a thousand things that cities can do, both incentives and disincentives, to discourage automobile use and to encourage alternative modes of transportation. Cities also need to shift the major mode of transportation from the personal automobile to public transit, and then they have to convert the energy source for that public transit to a renewable source. Now, transportation usually gets most of the blame when it comes to issues of global warming and greenhouse gas emissions. The reality is, however, that most of the wasted energy occurs not in the automobile, although that's a major contributor, but it comes from an inefficient built environment. In other words, the way we've been building cities has been based on the assumption that we have an infinite amount of cheap energy and that there are no negative environmental impacts from burning that energy. We know that's not true now. And so cities can have a dramatic impact on reducing greenhouse gases if they simply focus on the built environment, if they insist on green building design through their building codes, if they adopt a model energy codes for all new construction. Cities need to focus on energy efficiency in all they do and in everything that's built and in the existing infrastructure and built environment that exists. Secondly, they need to focus on creating distributed energy systems. Instead of relying on the old centralized power plant that's very inefficient, we need to start building buildings that generate their own power. We need to develop facilities. Every facility we develop needs to be an energy producer, not just an energy consumer. And finally, of course, we need to shift our energy sources to renewable sources. So model energy codes, something cities can do quite easily. Green building standards, again, easily done. Cities can adopt the Energy Star program. In other words, everything they purchase, every piece of equipment, every appliance, being energy efficient. Cities can, as I said, do cogeneration. In our city hall here in Honolulu, we developed our own cogeneration power plant using waste syngas, and we cut our demand for fossil fuels by 80%. Overnight from the web. Even seemingly insignificant things at the city level can have a dramatic impact on reducing energy consumption. For instance, using LED lights in traffic signals, that one change, changing the light bulbs in traffic signals, can cut energy usage in a city dramatically. In Honolulu, we replaced the incandescent lights with LED lights, and that one change saves us $250,000 a year in lower electrical bills. Not only that, but instead of having to send workers out to change those lights every few months, Now the workers only have to go out and change the LED bulbs once every 9 years. Other small changes also can have a big impact. Renewable energy can be used for instance, parking lot lighting. These lights that we're field testing in Honolulu have a small wind turbine that hangs down and a photovoltaic cell on top, always powering the battery that lights the light. No energy is used from the grid on lighting such as this. Other things the cities can do to reduce consumption of fossil fuels, they can convert their fleet to biofuels. In Honolulu, for instance, we changed over all of our municipal fleet, our garbage trucks and all the rest, to biofuels. And so now the refuse truck here is basically run on used McDonald's French fry oil, cutting the consumption of fossil fuels. And now when the garbage truck drives by, it smells wonderful. It smells like McDonald's French fries. A small thing, but added up, they result in significant energy savings at the city level. Cities can also, of course, focus on solar initiatives, utilizing solar energy, wind energy, and other alternatives to provide the primary energy for their customers. Now, energy, of course, is the fundamental problem that's affecting our coral reefs on a global scale. But specific urban areas are also impacting regional coral reefs and the quality of our ocean environment. Such things as poor storm drain practices in municipal areas have a big negative impact. How cities deal with the stormwater runoff has a direct impact on the quality of the marine ecosystem surrounding the city. So improving storm drain systems, coming up with better ways such as Vactor trucks to keep the catch basins clean so that when the rains come they don't wash out and flush out a whole lot of urban contaminants into the near shore waters. Setting up grading control so that whenever there is a construction taking place or agricultural operations taking place, that the water that is runoff is properly collected and treated in retention and detention ponds. And of course, all this is done through appropriate city permitting and regulations, steps that can easily be taken to dramatically improve the nearshore waters. Construction mitigation with detention retention ponds, I mentioned, watershed protection, setting in place regulations that protect the forest hinterland that surrounds the city and is in most cases the source of the drinking water for the city. And of course, many urban areas have decimated their wetlands. Many of the wetlands around the earth have been infilled for coastal development and industrial development, and that can be prevented with the appropriate regulations at the municipal level. Many cities have direct control over the agricultural operations in the lands that surround them. And of course, what we've seen in most parts of the world is dreadful irrigation practices and land management practices that's resulted in not only harmful sediment runoff, infrastructure lacking to be able to handle it, but also the runoff of agricultural pesticides and herbicides, and in many cases the overgrazing of agricultural lands surrounding urban areas, and with that the desertification of our planet. In many parts of Asia, the deserts are marching across the agricultural land, impacting the surrounding cities. Another step that cities can take to help protect our oceans deals with point source pollution. Seemingly the easiest kind of pollution to regulate, since you can establish direct quality controls and you can deal with point source pollution, usually with an end of pipe technology. But many cities find it difficult to regulate some of the major employers within their community. And as a result, even though the technical solution is easy, the political solution is often hard to achieve. One of the areas where cities have a continuing challenge is in wastewater. And so cities can start adopting recycling programs to reuse their wastewater for agricultural and industrial purposes. They can use technologies to treat the effluent with ultraviolet disinfection, and of course there are other technologies to recycle the solids from the municipal wastewater and use those in agricultural operations. Water conservation is another way cities can both conserve energy as well as water and reduce the sewage effluent volumes by providing incentives, for instance, for people to buy low energy use and low water use washing machines, low flow shower heads, and low volume flush toilets. A whole variety of technologies are available that can be required through municipal ordinances, again, to reduce energy usage and to reduce the amount of effluent that ultimately may be reaching the marine environment. Another area that cities have a direct control over is solid waste. Much of the solid waste in many of the developing world cities is left on the street to be absorbed by the environment. Much of it finds its way into catch basins or simply into streams that flush out into the ocean. We really need a complete change in attitude about solid waste. We have to realize that, in fact, there is no such thing as waste. There are only resources, resources that need to be used and reused. We need to divorce ourselves from the term consumer. The planet can no longer support consumers. We have a finite amount of resources and a finite ecosystem in which to absorb the waste from the consumption of resources. So we have to become users and reusers of natural resources. That takes a fundamental change in understanding at the local level, and that can only be achieved through city leadership. We need to start recycling our plastics, again, something that cities can do, recycling our glass into glasfalt and using it to repave the roads, and recycling as well all of the other materials that flow through a city so that they become an environmental asset instead of an environmental liability. And when cities do need to put in landfills, it's important that cities adopt the technology that lines these landfills with leachate membranes so that any water that percolates through this contamination is trapped and treated instead of directly entering the groundwater or, of course, leaking out into the nearshore marine environment. But again, as with energy and wastewater, so with solid waste, we need to focus not just on how to deal with increasing mountains of waste. We need to start looking at demand-side management. How do we reduce the amount of waste that we're generating in our cities? And this can be done through incentives, through regulation, regulating packaging. A whole variety of techniques are available for demand-side management, from recycling all containers, mandatory recycling of all containers, to incentives for people to use recyclable packaging in the products that they develop and sell. One area in which local marine communities have been deficient is in the area of coastal zone management. Having strict controls about the development that occurs along the coast. And again, this is an area where cities can quickly and easily take action, establishing land use ordinances to regulate the kinds of uses that are permitted within the coastal zone, to require environmental impact analysis of any development or any construction that is proposed within that area, to be able to understand and evaluate the environmental consequences on the ocean and on the nearshore area of those actions before they're taken. And of course, to be able to provide setbacks from the coast and from estuary areas, wetland areas of any development so that those areas are protected and buffered. Many of our urban areas have been severely damaging the coast through city-sponsored construction activities, the development of breakwaters, sand mining, dredging activities, seawall construction. All of these activities, usually municipally done, can be done without these negative impacts on the marine environment if we have city leadership, local government leadership, that is aware and understanding of these issues and has the capacity within their staffs to make sure that these proposals and project conceptual ideas are evaluated from an environmental standpoint before they receive city approval. Fisheries also can be impacted by city governments. In some areas, the city has direct control over the fish and game regulations, and so they can tailor those controls to a better ecological understanding of the fisheries and the environmental considerations of their coastal areas. But cities can also do more. In cities that have large subsistence fisheries, those fisheries are in almost every case overfished. Cities can provide economic development opportunities for low-income citizens to reduce the demand for subsistence fisheries. Cities can provide small agricultural plots so that each family, even in a high-rise situation, can go a few blocks away and have access to a small plot of land to be able to raise some of their own food. There are many things that cities can do to reduce the impact, the negative impact of urbanization on our nearshore fisheries. Probably the most important thing that a city can do is develop an educational program that raises the awareness of the public, that makes them understand the real impacts of overfishing nearshore fisheries, that reconstitutes and re-energizes the cultural pride that often goes with conservation efforts that perhaps have a cultural origin. All these things are within the control of city governments, but in most cases they're not being exercised. A lot of coastal cities obviously rely on tourism for a portion of their economic development. But by the same token, most coastal cities don't develop their tourism in a sustainable way. And so the cities can both help their economy and protect marine environments by establishing more marine protected areas, these MPAs that serve as a way for us to protect special marine environments, whether they're coral reef environments, embayments, estuaries, whatever they may be. But cities have the ability to utilize those resources from a tourism standpoint if they manage those resources sustainably. Now, of course, many cities have begun to realize that protecting the environment is good for the economy. And in Honolulu, for instance, we're developing our tourism economy in a completely unsustainable way. We were destroying the very things that people were coming to Hawaii to enjoy, the beautiful environment, the beautiful ocean, and the multicultural community that is Hawaii. And so having people within city government realize that there is a direct economic impact that goes with the preservation and the protection of marine resources is an important step. Establishing ecotourism, but doing it in such a way that the ecological systems aren't being exploited, but they're being enhanced through the development of the tourism industry. In Honolulu, we developed a beautiful marine protected area and Hanama Bay now is the site of a million tourists a year. Having done carrying capacity studies, developed Nature Learning Center, we turned what was an overcrowded beach experience into a nature learning experience that is enhancing the marine ecosystem, protecting the resource, and yet using it for economic development. All of these things that I've talked about today, a new energy policy that focuses on energy efficiency, distributed energy systems, and renewable energy, a focus on new transportation systems that focus on public transit instead of the automobile, that focus on fuels that are not fossil fuel based, energy systems that are not reliant on fossil fuels, land use planning requires us to focus on high density mixed use instead of urban sprawl. All of these things can be done by cities, but they all require political will. And in many cases, that political will simply isn't there. And I think I talk to many scientists, I work with scientists around the world, and I often find that they are frustrated. The scientist has provided perhaps the definitive factual information, they say, well, we provided the facts. Why didn't they do the obvious, make the obvious decision? Based on these facts, this is the decision that should be made. And then, of course, that isn't the decision that's made, and the scientific community is frustrated. I think people outside of politics need to realize that decisions within the political context are not made based on facts. Political decisions are made based on political decisions. They're based on politics. And so the politician is thinking first and foremost, how is this decision that I make going to be perceived, and what impact is it going to have on my political future? And so what we have to do as a scientific community is convey information to elected leadership in such a way that they realize that the best decision from a scientific standpoint, from an environmental standpoint, sustainability standpoint, is in fact as well the best political decision. And the only way you do that is by educating the electorate. Once the public understands it's the right thing to do, they in fact will put pressure on the elected leadership to do the right thing. Now that means involving the citizens. That means getting them involved in environmental activities, to protect the marine environment. In Honolulu, we have programs where volunteers go out and stencil all the storm drains, indicating that any waste that's dumped in the storm drain is going to go directly to the ocean. Volunteers that adopt streams within the island and work with city crews to keep those streams clean and protected from pollution and waste, so that it doesn't flush out onto our ocean areas. We have Adopt a Reef programs that do similar things. We set up a whole cadre of children, earth protection agents, who receive training in identifying water pollution and identification cards, and they call into the hotline to report any pollution activities that they see. And we've utilized the famous people, celebrities that come through to help get our message out. For instance, people like Jackie Chan have developed TV spots for us, as well as a host of other celebrities that run on the television, encouraging our local community, and especially our young people, to get involved in stopping ocean pollution to protect our nearshore water quality. One of the other things that will motivate elected leadership to take a more sustainable approach in managing cities is if there is a system that evaluates cities, that grades cities based on their environmental performance. Not only do we need the political will, but we need to provide recognition for those political leaders that are achieving sustainable goals within their city, and we need to be able to provide the red flag for those cities that aren't meeting the sort of environmental criteria that need to be met. And so grading municipal performance by various organizations is important. That gives local leadership something to shoot for. It gives them something to take credit for once they achieve the environmental standard, and it provides a strong incentive for those cities that aren't meeting nationally or internationally recognized grading for environmental performance. Many cities, especially in the developing world, have the difficulty of having direct impact on their marine environment, but also they have the lack of authority to control the wheels of power that need to be controlled to minimize those impacts. So we need to see a devolution of authority down to the city level. cities need to be able to have the financing capacity to issue general obligation bonds, for instance, to be able to develop the sewage treatment plant or the storm drain system, to be able to minimize impact on the coastal zone. Cities need to be able to have the authority to set regulations to be able to control effluent from industry. Cities have to have the authority to be able to provide both incentives and regulatory disincentives for inappropriate environmental activity. All of these things can be done better at the local level than at the national level, because it's at the cities, it's within the cities that these problems are occurring, and they can only be solved if we give city leaders the authority to deal with them. Not just the responsibility, but both the regulatory and financial authority to deal with them. Once we give cities the authority, we also have to provide them with the skills. And so many cities recognize that there is a problem, but there is not the capacity within the city staff to deal with the problem. And so programs need to be set up where we have capacity building efforts to provide the training that's needed for the public works director, for the director of wastewater services, the director of transportation. All of these city leaders need the training in order to be able to convert to sustainable management of their city operations. And in many cases, they need assistance with the technology transfer to be able to deal with the environmental problems that they confront. It's not only the technical staff that needs training within cities, it's also the management staff that needs training. The management tools that are required to run cities as systems instead of the old stovepipe approach to city management. All this requires capacity building for the technical level as well as the managerial level. And we also need to provide assistance, the tools for these city leaders to be able to manage their cities in a sustainable way, taking a systems approach. And perhaps the best tool is a systems-wide geographic information system, which allows cities to integrate information and data from a wide variety of activities, all of their infrastructure, all of their land use, all of their public service, all integrated, so that when they make a decision, it's based on the best available information, and it is a more sustainable decision. And by the same token, with an enterprise-wide GIS, geographic information system, cities are going to be better able to manage and operate their infrastructure in such a way that it minimizes environmental impact on the oceans. Scientists can play a big role. Scientists need to start translating their scientific knowledge into a form that is usable by city leaders. Now, that doesn't just mean publishing a paper. City leaders, in many cases, don't have the technical expertise to be able to interpret the paper, and they don't have the time. City leaders are dealing with basically crisis management 24/7, and so they need to be able to have the information that the scientist has in a usable form immediately available to them. That's going to require an intense effort from the scientific community to start looking at their knowledge, the knowledge they develop through their research programs, in a very different way, in a very applied way, in a very basic way. And once the research community, the scientific community, translates that information, they also need to help extend that information. Not just put it out in a brochure, but help reach out and convey that information to city governments in a way that they can use it. And a third recommendation to our scientific community is that they set up mechanisms to listen to local government so that the local government can help identify some of the problems that are in need of further research. City mayors will be able to tell researchers the kinds of problems that they're having, for instance, with coastal development, with nearshore water quality, with fisheries, whatever the problem happens to be. But if there is a mechanism set up so that the researchers can listen and understand what the real world problems are of those local governments, it will open up to them a range of research opportunities as well as a political base to help the researchers develop the funding they need to do the applied research that's needed. Now, here in Hawaii, we have established a program that attempts to deal with many of these issues for cities within the Asia-Pacific region. It's called the Mayor's Asia-Pacific Environmental Summit. This is a program we set up about 9 years ago. And in this program, we bring together mayors from the entire Asia-Pacific region every other year and help them formulate sustainable plans for their cities. We bring them the best and the brightest talent to be able to learn about the latest in sustainable initiatives and understanding how to better develop and manage cities in a sustainable way. We set up programs so that they can share information and best practices. We engage in capacity building, not just with the mayors, but with their managerial and skilled staff. And we help form regional partnerships to deal with regional environmental problems and marine-related problems. But perhaps the most important aspect of this MAPES program, Mayor's Asia-Pacific Environmental Summit program, is that each mayor at the end of the summit stands up and makes a quantifiable commitment to sustainable improvements that they're going to make in their city in the coming 2 years. It may be, as one Indian mayor pledged, to go from having 25% of the sewage in the city treated to 100%. Another may be to set up a coastal zone management program to control coastal development, a whole range of possible initiatives that mayors commit to. And then, in many cases, we reach out and provide assistance to those cities. The Sustainable Cities Institute, which operates the Mayor's Asia-Pacific Environmental Summit, an offshoot of the Environmental Foundation, is able to reach out to cities to provide them information and training to be able to help not only meet the commitments that they've made at the summit conferences, but also to meet the other challenges of sustainability that they confront on a day-to-day basis. And the Sustainable Cities Institute, working with the Royal Institute of Technology, the School of Energy and the Environment in Stockholm, Sweden, has developed a certificate program in urban sustainability for city leaders. And so we will send professors from the Royal Institute to any city and conduct an intensive three-day training program for city leaders and city staffs in a whole range of urban sustainability issues, from land use, transportation, energy, recycling programs, to wastewater treatment, solid waste, the use of technology in sustainable management of cities, GIS systems, a whole range of activities, sustainable tourism even. And then those city leaders that participated will receive a certificate in urban sustainability from the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm. These are just a couple of the programs that we've developed to try to reach out to city governments, to try to provide them assistance in not only understanding the challenges of sustainability that we confront, but also providing them with the capacity and the tools and the understanding of how to deal with those challenges. There is no question in my mind that our oceans are in jeopardy. Our planet, in fact, is in peril. We have developed our civilization on a failed paradigm of seemingly endless resource and endless consumption of resources. We know now that that's not possible. There are a finite amount of resources on this planet, and our globe cannot absorb a finite amount of waste from the consumption of those resources. We need a new paradigm, but that has to be an urban paradigm. We're not going to save our coral reefs. We're not going to save our ocean if we simply focus on protecting unique environments. Information and knowledge alone will not solve this problem. The only way we're going to save our oceans is if we save our cities. And I want to acknowledge the work that's been done by the scientific community in recent years to develop absolutely cutting-edge research to understand the problems that our oceans face. The challenge now is to take that knowledge and convert it to action at the city level. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Mayor Harris, for introducing us to these challenges and solutions and for opening our eyes to the part we can and need to play. Jeremy has also written an excellent paper on this topic for the World Ocean Observatory, and we invite you to explore this and the many other resources available on this website to better understand the impact cities are having on our ocean and near shore marine environments.